Good morning and welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. Nothing ticks better than Pundit Friday, which we're about to begin here in the WNHH studio.
Yeah.
With the number one pundits in the media universe. Pundits like, oh no, we don't have Avril's Ivy today, the boot got her.
Oh man.
Our thoughts are with you, Babs, as you battle Crown Street, Union Avenue, and whatever else you got to do to get those wheels back. But we still got a full house. We got the flyest news hunter-gatherer this side of Fleet Street, boss of the Budget Beat and the Beauty Beat, star New Haven independent reporter,
Happy Markeisha Friday,
Ricks.
People.
We have another star New Haven independent reporter in the studio, the unstoppable Lucy Gilman.
Oh, Lucy.
The ever-ready battery.
We have, that's right. That is true. She does. The queen of quippery and quintessence of compassion, our den mother of decision-making, La Voz Hispana publisher, Norma Rodriguez-Reyes.
Yes. See, Norma, you're growing. Your names are growing.
I know.
And let us give some respect for the bravest man in New Haven, WNHA station manager, and unapologetic Donald Trump fan. Yes, even still. Harry Droz.
That's in public.
We do have one other person in the studio.
Yes.
He is the sentinel of serenity, sincerity, and salvation.
Yes.
The poobah of unparalleled political passion and perspicacity. The righteous reaper of restitution, Mr. Top 2%er, the exalted expostulator of extemporaneous exegesis, bossa nova, mover, and shaker, the griot of the grassy knoll, the conquistador of cussing criminals, keeper of the cure, weaver of wellness and wisdom, mellifluous and meritocratic miner of melody, the plow driver of peace, the driver out of demons, discord, and dissonance. He's the optimizer of opulence and opportunity, the undertaker of unfiltered utterance, the erudite Earl of ergonomics, the liberated lion of lucidity, a maniacal monarch of mercy, the blistering barbecuer of brain-dead bozos, our executioner of existential enemies, the alchemist of assonance and alliteration, the zealous zapper of xenophobia, sagacious sergeant, salt in the swing, quintessential quipper of quotable quackery, the grandee of grandiloquence and gastronomics, he's our prize protector against pusillanimity, the distinguished duke of diplomacy and detente, the king of conspiracy concoction, the deacon of the dozens, the bodhisattva of battle rap, missionary of modesty, mesmerizer of the master, shaman of the shoreline, potentate of 360 state, the recognized ringleader of risque repartee, the eighth wonder of the world, wizard of wise guy waggery, the capo of casual conversation, first name in flame, daring don of death deliberation, sultan of spit,
it
West
does
Indian
not
whisperer
get any
of
than this.
Emperor of explosive exposition, esteemed elucidator of ebonics, top tier talent from Trinidad and Tobago, the dap tone deliverer of decency, the maximal medial maestro, but
don't
hate bold face barista of bop, chess master of chill, primo practitioner of pop prestidigitation. The beyond just somewhat honorable high priest of his hip hop, right reverend of rapture, reigning raconteur of
hip hop, sanctified
about. Slayer of slow witted, the never late for supper, time. Decorated, dazzling, and indefatigable dunker and dryer of the dinner dishes, maximum mixologist Joe Ugly.
Ew!
Joe Ugly
Finally.
Show in the morning. Well,
it's been a good show, y'all. We'll see you next week.
Don't hate,
this
appreciate.
This Markeisha is so jealous.
That's what it is. That's
I'm not jealous. I just have things to do. Paul promised that I was off after 11 o'clock today.
Well, we still got a minute left. Boy, you've had a lot going on. You, Lucy, and the crew, Chris Peak.
You're not allowed to leave anymore.
I know. I was up on the metaphorical mountain, the Jewish holiday Shavuot, where other people eating cheesecake, and I was listening to the Ten Commandments being read as told to Moses, and heard a joke about how Moses came down the second time to the tablets, and he said it good news and bad news. We got the tablets back, but no adultery is still in the mix. So, see, I didn't think it was a very funny joke, but that was told at my synagogue from the pulpit. I'm the late night study session of Shavuot. But back on Earth in New Haven, a lot's been going on as we get to the lead up of the close of the state legislative session. Now, everyone has, I understand, the little snoring going on and the no-dos getting popped out there, state legislative session capital. But half our budget comes from the state of Connecticut. And what we're allowed to do and not do comes from the state of Connecticut. And a lot, they always argue about what to do. And this year, there's been a lot of plans about what can make things better or worse for how we lock up people, whether solitary confinement or not, whether we're going to get $31 million, which now we're hoping is going to be $21 million extra dollars so we can balance our budget. And just all this stuff happens at the last minute in the session last week, and that's when the maneuvering happens. And Markeisha Ricks, you were up there at the Capitol this week, and there was a rally trying to get over the line with two criminal justice reform bills. Because, again, the oxygen has been taken out of the room in the Capitol with the budget crisis. We have $5.1 billion deficit over the next 2 years. But there's still stuff people care about that affects our lives that is in the balance. And two of those are bills being pushed by our own State Senator Gary Winfield and State Rep Robin Porter. Which would, what would it do, ban solitary confinement?
It would severely restrict it. It would restrict it for people who are juveniles, restrict it for those who have...
I mean, you can't do it if you're juvenile.
You can't do it if you're juvenile. For folks who have mental or physical disabilities. Mm. And additionally, for the people who do end up in confinement, the state would have to do a better job of reporting who's in there, why are they in there, how long have they been in there, that sort of thing.
And who would be monitoring these reports?
That's a good question.
The public, at least, make them public available, people who care. What have, now, would they limit the time an adult can be put in there?
I think they're limiting it to no longer than 15 consecutive days, because I think the standard is, like, or at least what advocates against solitary confinement have said, is that 15 days is basically torture. And people who've been in the corrections business tend to believe that as well.
Now, listen, the problem isn't just in New Haven. We've been hearing horror stories all over the country where people get, what, for like 9 months they've been in solitary, and it makes you nuts. It is torture. And on the other hand, we've been defunding our governments, although we have fewer inmates than we used to have.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And that's been, despite Jeff Sessions' best effort, that could continue, since 90% of inmates in America are in state prisons, not in federal jails. So Harry's buddy Jeff Sessions is going to screw things up in the federal jails, but 90% will still be controlled by both conservatives and liberals, Republicans and Democrats, who have a consensus outside of the nuts in the White House that society's better off, criminals have a better chance of stopping being criminals in the future, that that we're going to spend less money as taxpayers if we stop locking up the majority of nonviolent offenders for so long. But so now what are you hearing? What are some of the horror stories you heard about solitary confinement? Was it as bad in Connecticut as we heard in some other states?
Yes, quite frankly. So Connecticut has a supermax facility, Northern Correctional.
Right.
And essentially the way solitary confinement is meted out in almost every place, including Connecticut, is that you are in confinement, separated from other inmates for up to 22 hours a day. So you don't have any human contact. So think about this. I thought some of the information that was shared was really interesting about how it impacts somebody who's elderly. So if you're elderly, you already have certain chronic conditions probably. So you're locked up and you're isolated from people all day long, except for the time that you get out in the yard, I guess, to walk around and stretch your legs. You might end up with a vitamin D deficiency, which is going to lead to broken bones.
Right.
If you have any cognitive issues, they're going to probably further decline.
I thought the thing is you go nuts.
That's a big part of it, but there are other things, the other ways that you can come to harm. It's not just that you go crazy.
Which matters.
It does matter.
But how many months, were there stories here of 9 months? I know, I believe there was a 7 month with Sheldon Tucker. How long was he in when he was in pretrial? He was one of the people, Barfair's son, who was testifying about this.
Oh, he didn't really speak. He just kind of...
And obviously we feel for the congressional guards who sometimes have to maintain order, and people go in there have obviously been sometimes, at least usually, causing some kind of trouble in the general population, try to keep things in order. I think it speaks to our inability to solve some of the larger problems going on from justice, and it gets dumped at the hands of security guards, prison guards and inmates, and trying to figure out what to do.
Oh, she's back.
Oh, but hey, back from the boot? Is that Babs?
Great. She's wearing the boot like a fashion statement.
Babs Rolls Ivy, you got your car back.
No, it's not back yet.
Well, join us. Babs Rolls Ivy, the dairy-free goddess of our radio operation, is in the studio. She's back from her wrestling of the boot. We're going to hear about that in a minute. But first, I'd like to know, genuinely, Harry Jost, I know that you don't have the same opinion about criminal justice always, that you feel that there's a reason to get tougher with people, who, even if they're arrested on nonviolent offenses, sometimes that's really, we just got them on that, but in fact, doing something deeper, they don't always turn their lives around when they get the chance. That how do you feel about this move to rein in solitary confinement?
I don't know, because I actually don't have an opinion on it, because I think I would like solitary confinement myself.
Like, I'd like to be alone.
Please. Yeah, I would like to be left alone.
That's my choice, though.
But I don't know.
Do you get the books? Do you get to have books in solitary confinement? I didn't think so.
I don't think so. No, I don't think you
anyway,
get any.
I would think that too, and
particularly if you're like somebody that they think might cause themselves some type of harm.
And it is a torture technique used to break down people and trying to get them to confess in police states. I'm not saying this is used here.
Or just to break you in general. Like if you are defiant or resistant in any way.
And you read the prison memoirs of how people use this incredible concentration, those who emerge from jail stronger and deal with adversity. They
and we use solitary confinement sometimes just what we say to protect one inmate from other inmates. So at the same time, you're like contributing to somebody's like mental like harm by trying to protect them from physical harm. But there's no other standard way to like protect an inmate
so
from other inmates
look,
except
Babs,
to put them so it looks like imprisonment.
Does it look like this bill is going to pass?
Gary Winfield said that no bill is dead until Wednesday at midnight. I don't know what that means because I've covered a legislature where if it doesn't get on the calendar, then it's dead. Like they can genuinely say.
And I know at the end of the session,
and
they don't get
everything on the
calendar.
It's not that way. It just seems like anything can happen still up until
the
midnight.
The legislative
Wednesday.
Leadership gets to bring stuff up or attach it to bills. Babs, did you have feelings about solitary confinement?
I mean, I think the problem I have with solitary confinement.
Unfortunately, you got the lame mic, so you need to get real close, got to kiss it.
I think the problem I have with solitary confinement is that it's not judiciously allocated. That I think it's sometimes at the whim of if some CO feel some way about you.
Corrections officer.
Corrections officer feels some kind of way about you, or if somebody has an axe to grind or any of that. Because we've seen cases where people have been in solitary confinement for reasons that did not fit the crime. And I don't know what crime you commit that warrants solitary confinement for these ridiculously long periods of time.
And it's the length of the time that's a big issue. Now, you were in federal custody, not state. What did you notice when you were behind bars, the federal bars, was it used much? Was it used as a threat? How did the guards?
Well, you know, because I was in the camp, the camp is very sort of open, and so I wasn't in the.
But nobody in that camp ever acted out and needed to be kept.
Oh yeah,
in solitary?
The first day I got there, you went to the shoe.
What's the shoe?
The shoe is where they.
That's
like,
SHOO.
SHUE stands for. I think it's solitary, some kind of solitary confinement kind of thing. And since I was only there for 29 days, the woman that I saw go in, she got out just before I left. So I saw her coming and then I saw her as I was
going. She was in for a whole month.
So she was in there for a whole month.
So even at a camp where people are considered, you know, low risk offenders and all that, they still have solitary confinement.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you do something, I think she was fighting with another woman. You know, she was fighting with another
inmate. So she fights another woman for a month, she's going to be in solitary.
Yeah.
What happens if someone picks a fight with you and you have to worry you're going to get blamed because don't they often throw both in? Or?
Oh, well, in this particular case, this woman was the aggressor. And it was clear that she was the aggressor. So the other woman didn't go. This woman went.
And what was the general feeling about the... I'm sorry, Joe, what were you asking?
No, I want to know, how did they know it was clear that she was the aggressor?
Because the officers were there. Oh, so this wasn't one of these isolated things where like it happened out of somebody's
view. You see, my
view.
Thing about this is that I'm deeply concerned about isolation and people that are incarcerated, because most people that are incarcerated are there, believe it or not, there are a lot of mental issues connected to it. So when you pile on separation on top of it, I think it just adds. It just makes it worse for someone. Here's my issue. If the person is not doing life, eventually they're coming back to society. And the more you mess them up in there and they come back to society and can't connect, it's the worst our society is going to be.
Well, now, I'm completely in favor of this bill, and I think most people are, including probably corrections people. But I do feel for corrections officers who have difficult situation in jail sometimes about how they're going to deal with someone who's making a safe haven. No?
No. When we got
not endorsing this idea of locking people in solitary for a long time. Just saying that a lot of times we dump a lot of these unanswered questions and difficult challenges without the money, without the going with root causes on the people we're paying in those unpleasant jobs to deal
with. But
you
see, Paul, here's what the thing that concerns me is, who's the individual that's really going to say, okay, that's long enough? Who's the expert in that department?
I think a lot of it has to do with the monitoring. As Mark is saying, not sure who's going to be reading it. Are the ACLU going to pay attention to it? Will Inmate rights. Norma, you look like you wanted to say something.
You know,
please get close there.
There's a classic movie, Shawshank.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
About this solitary confinement. We're talking about local, state, and federal confinement. What about military? I got some war stories of some of our kids, who were fine when they went into the military. And when they came out,
Was it because of solitary confinement?
Yes.
Yeah, tell us about that. What happened?
If you end up in the likes of Leavenworth, or you go into one of the Stockade, I recall in Mannheim, Germany, that was the holding house.
When you were in the military.
When I was in the military, Coleman Barracks was Stockade. And the things you hear, you go by Coleman Barracks sometimes, and you just hear people just screaming sometimes. You know, it's like, it's military prison, you know, jail. It's a lot different. You know, you end up in Leavenworth. Well, just call it a wrap.
So what did you hear, Norma, from people who were put in military solitary confinement?
There was this one particular kid that I know that he was from our church. Mm-hmm. He went in, and he was
fine.
You
go closer, Norma?
He was fine.
Mm-hmm.
He went into the military and bought a car.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess at that time couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And him and a couple of buddies decided that they were going to burn the car.
Mm-hmm.
To collect insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Obviously, they got caught.
Right.
When you're going to do something, you got to do it by yourself.
Well, no.
You don't do it with other people because eventually they're going to tell. You're not going to tell it yourself.
Or you could just tell it among friends on Friday Pundits on WNHH Radio, which you're listening to at your home for community radio at 103.5 FM. What? Live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. We're doing Friday Pundits with the running down the week's headlines with Babs Ivy back from the boot. Joe Ugly, Markeisha Ricks, Norma Rodriguez Reyes, and Harry Joe. So Markeisha, you and Chris Peek are going to keep us up to date next week about what happens with this, what happens with the police accountability bill.
Are we going to call this blog The Bitter End?
Ooh, I love that. Blog The Bitter End. Ooh, that's a good one. And about the big union station fight. So this continues going on, guys.
My God.
This is the political drama about who's going to get control, union station, the city or the state, and whether who's going to own it. Are they going to transfer ownership through a bill that the state wants to hold on to it? The city wants it. It's a gem, a financial jewel. But also for us, the issue is in the public, what's going to happen with Union Station. The city has visions of building up. There's going to be a second garage. They want it to be lined with stores. They want there to be, they want to double or triple the amount of commercial space inside from 1,600 to 4,600 square feet inside the Union Station, including opening up the balcony, having a restaurant cafe inside and outside. Markeisha, this week you had a plan the city put out, and they're going to talk about it more Friday afternoon as the session ends. And why are they putting it out now? It's a 100-year plan, apparently, for how to improve it, which really what it looked like to me was a 3-stage way to free up the money to first put a garage, make repairs in the station, build that garage into more of a transit-oriented development, multi-use facility, and then in the third stage, put, and all together, like something like $61 million, make it a big thing. The state says, look, the money's for a garage, period, a garage. You have other projects in that area. You've been wanting this garage for a long time. You take it or leave it at the garage. And the state says, you can't run this well. The city says, we are the ones who saved it when you wanted to trash it. What was the timing of the release of the city report for a long-term change design in the station?
I think the timing has to do with the state getting some news, particularly Hartford, that Aetna is looking to move its headquarters, which I think Aetna was founded here in Connecticut. Like, it's been here forever.
And we were the insurance capital that keeps...
Exactly.
Waning.
And so, you know, and Hartford's on the verge of possible bankruptcy.
You might as well be like the thug capital of the world. I mean, to be the insurance company, these health insurance companies, their whole business model is to take our money and not give us health insurance. I don't get why we want them.
Well, that's such another topic.
Ooh, I think Governor Malloy would hate you for saying those things because he just told reporters on Wednesday that we're still in position to be the best place for insurance companies to have their business.
Anyway, Aetna said they might move their headquarters.
Move their headquarters. They have about 5,600 employees here in the state. If they move their headquarters, it would take them at least 200 of those employees out of here.
Where are they trying to go?
Who is this?
Edmund? I'm not sure where they're going.
Well, the guest was New York because the CEO loves hanging out in New York. He posts all these blog guys of New York.
And so that's a really interesting thing.
But that's not many jobs out of it.
That's not many jobs, but they may ultimately reduce the size of their force in Connecticut. Like, I mean, literally what at least two companies have said in the recent years, GE, now Aetna, is that other states and cities are more fun. Hartford isn't fun. Like, our employees and particularly the CEO, I don't want to live here.
That's interesting you bring that up, Markeisha, because they're hanging this as a noose around Malloy's neck, the Democrats' neck. They say, who lost GE? GE moved their headquarters. They pretended a little bit. It was about, we don't like to pay taxes. Mm-hmm. You know, states should compete to pay us to have the privilege of making money in your community. The truth was, it was very clear from what GE wrote in its own documents that it went to Boston because it wanted an innovative tech center. It wanted some place where it would be the synergy with universities and other generators of a workforce of high-tech people. And that actually requires more investment, not less, from the government. It actually requires, and I hate to say this, ready, hold yours, taxes. Mm-hmm. You actually got to raise money if you want to invest in infrastructure and making places into hubs. So it's easy to get the headline, GE moves, now Aetna, boy, are they screwing up everything and stop taxing us, this conservative chant. When in truth, I think it actually points up to something opposite. But I'd love to hear what resident Donald Trump supporter Harry Jost has to say about that. Am I wrong about that, about Aetna and GE?
I don't understand what you would be wrong about. My thing is just, how do you keep the businesses here? What's your plan to keep them here?
Well, the argument here would be, and I don't pretend I know how to do this, Harry, so, but the argument based just on this evidence is that you need more public investment in a workforce that can be innovative and these people can hire to do new things, to have these tech hubs like we're developing in New Haven. The state's trying to help us. Markeisha was there a week earlier and we made a pitch for a $5.5 million state grant to build on that hub. That it actually involves public investment, not in corporate welfare to companies like Alexion that come and then try to rip off the world and end up in five, you know, police investigations and all their top brasses leaving. More like creating the conditions where innovation exists. But also the other thing is that Markeisha said they actually believe some of us do, and they did some kind of study the Hartford Current cited that CEOs just like to be in fun places, and Hartford is death.
But you know, Paul,
Solitary Confinement is horrible, and that's worse. But then there's Hartford.
But you know something that But the thing about Hartford has always been this place where after 5 o'clock it goes to a ghost town.
Yeah.
And the reason being is because no one lives downtown. Unlike New Haven, where we have people living. So just look at this.
But some of that was public investment. We did a minor amount of public investment that I'll admit I was wrong in opposing back in the day, where we built this whole downtown infrastructure with the new sidewalks, with the renovation of the theater. And then there was a lot of private investment that now is really paying off on all these apartments. But also in Hartford, I would say that those same insurance companies were part of the secret Brahmins who ran that state. Norm, you know what I'm talking about. Then Hartford was always these buttoned down. They were against creativity.
Right.
They took anyone who was going to challenge, do things different, be creative. And they were these real kind of buttoned down, unelected people who ran that city and made it what it was, just like a greedy, soulless place. And so now
these companies are like gentrifiers, though, right? So think about the thing that you just laid out here, that they were these buttoned down non-creatives. They didn't want to live in the city because they have whatever connotation about what Hartford is.
Yeah.
And they want, so they live out in the burbs, and then they're like, oh, this is boring. I want to be where it's cool at. So now I'm going to move into this place where everybody else has made things cool, where everybody else has made these investments to make this a cool place. And here they show up. It's like, oh, this is where I want to live. Right.
Downtown.
Sucks.
One of the reasons why New Haven is the thriving city when you compare it to all the other Connecticut cities is because
George Savoni, huh?
Is because New Haven has a very large middle class population.
Actually, that's not true.
You cannot have
New Haven City does not have it. We've lost the middle class. We are poor and rich.
Poor and rich.
Okay. Well, that started happening since when? Are we poor and rich?
20 years. 10
okay.
Years.
The whole thing is you have a lot of people bleeding the city.
They always,
they're bleeding
right.
the city.
Correct.
They don't. They want to work and make their money in the city,
and
but
bounce.
Then they don't want to invest in the city,
they
and
bounce.
Then they blame
yep.
who? When you have too many poor people, and DeStefano said this, when you have too many poor people in one area, that is not good. You have to be able to intermingle all the different. The different
economic
not only ethnic groups. but also economically.
And I would argue that some of it happened organically because we're a university medical city. There actually was this kind of, now we couldn't thrive as well as Stanford or the area around MIT, was it 128? Because we didn't have quite the same level of engineering talent. Yale was still in engineering. But once Yale invested more in the cities, once it became a fun place for all the arts, which is not just Yale, but Yale definitely is a factor in it. You had these young people who decided it is fun to live here and empty nesters who wanted to come live, and we made the housing available. I think that's part of what happened. And
that's
what I was saying about Hartford,
Paul. It's like, you know, there's no investment in housing. People living there. Because if there are people living, then you have a need to have restaurants. Because they have restaurants, but they're not
they
after
do.
5 yeah. o'clock.
And they have
close.
Theater. They have restaurants.
They have a lot of stuff there.
But
they don't have
right.
any people there.
Nobody lives downtown. Because when I worked in Hartford, I remember thinking, it's a great looking city, right?
Great
there's nobody
city.
Here.
But after 5 o'clock,
after
it's gone.
After 5 here. O'clock? And definitely on a Friday.
And I'm talking, this goes back to 1985.
But I think it's the lack of soul. I think it was the unelected Brahmins who had disgust and little interest in the needs or of the people who lived in the city, did not deal them into decision-making. I think we had a much messier and robust and productive process in New Haven deciding what we wanted to be.
On that thought process, let's bring it back to New Haven for just a second, right? Mm-hmm. So in the story that Brian and I did today about the city unveiling its plan, I have some remarks there from the governor about the need to invest in cities. And he mentioned New Haven quite a bit. And mentioned New Haven as a success story, right? So it's very interesting to me that the city has this plan. It wants to take control of Union Station. Malloy has never endorsed that plan. In fact, he told them a while back, it's going to be a garage.
Transit commissioner is fighting.
And is fighting the
takeover. And partly they want
that.
The money, too, right? They're trying to sweep for past due bills.
Absolutely. They definitely don't want to turn over Union Station for a couple million dollars or whatever it is.
And neither should.
But
and
at the same
really
time, I think the city is also saying to the state that you've said you have a vision.
Mm-hmm.
We got one on paper. You don't have one.
Exactly. And, you know, Markeisha and I had talked about this a while ago. The state is not known for business development.
That's not
They're not known for economic development. So they need to get out
there.
Or
at least not out of the Department of Transportation.
Well, I don't know where in the state.
There's an economic
development.
Well,
they have the First Five program that helps greedy, dishonest companies like Alexion build new towers and then turn it into
and
a new apartment.
And we see how
that
turns, which is going to be my new housing.
Yeah, no. Are you going to have us up?
Soon as they, I'm not like Joe.
And is your apartment going to be higher? Is your apartment going to be higher in the air than Joe Edley's at 360 State?
Yeah. She's like, I'm trying to get your view. Thank you very much.
It's going to be higher.
But I think that is a fascinating strategy from the city to say, put up or shut up. We have a plan. You all haven't laid out anything. You keep talking about these upgrades that you want to do and why you can't turn it over to the city. Put up or shut up.
And we've done economic development successfully in this city.
And we've run Union Station for 35 years when you let it go to pot.
State says, look, we've given you a lot of money for stuff. And look what you've done around the Trans Station. You let Church Street South go to pot and let some greedy developer run the place down.
But again, the city can still come back and say, we have a plan for Church Street South.
Okay, then they're going to say,
we have a plan for Hilda downtown.
When I heard back from the state,
come back.
The Coliseum site. They knocked down the Coliseum. We offered
$21
million to rebuild
the streets. You haven't delivered, but the state has no actual plan. They've never laid out
something. But wait, the state did. The state said, we'll give you $21 million to rebuild the streets around the Coliseum. And it's years late and you got no plan happening now.
Stop. You're messing with my view now.
Joe, it's not going to be as tall
Joe,
as your apartment.
Joe, you're so
selfish. Joe, you're on the 99th floor of 360 State. That thing is not getting up that high.
Paul,
it's a nice view.
You see the highway from my view?
I did.
That goes away with a 6-story building.
You'd rather see the highway than to see an interesting place. The highway's beautiful.
You have a view of the bridge?
Just watching the cars going back and forth. And just
Joe, you're still going to see the cars going back around it.
You feel like stuff coming into the city, stuff going on.
You can see the expanse and the prosperity that is New Haven.
Thank God we don't hang economic development on
Joe Ugly's view.
Well, who's got a violin here? This is the Joe Ugly sympathy hour.
You guys can say whatever you want to. I want to see my cars.
Okay.
Leave a parking lot.
Cue some Godfather music.
But let me ask you, the city make good money on the parking lots anyways. Just as economic.
Those are private parking
lots. City just made some good money off of me.
Let's hear about that after we remind people
that
they learned. You're listening to Friday Pundits. Pundit Friday on WNHH Radio, Stateline, New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, with Joe Ugly, Markeisha Ricks, Norm Rodriguez-Reyes, Harry Joseph and Babs.
And I want my view to stay. I'm serious
now,
about
Babs, this. Babs, tell us why you weren't here. What happened with your car, Babs?
I got a boot.
What happened?
I had unpaid
That's when you have unpaid parking. They immobilize your car.
Yes.
So you're going to have to pay the meter.
I didn't realize I had that many parking tickets, and I didn't have time to like comb through and make them. But what they put on the paper and what he totaled up was not quite accurate, so I ended up paying less. But Price and I admit, I did have parking tickets. I had no idea it was that many.
So you found out at 10 o'clock that you had parking tickets?
Yes.
How did you get back so fast?
I went over there, I paid it, and came back.
And they let you get your boot back that quick?
No, well, they'll come and get it.
They said within a half hour, so I figured, ah.
So you get like extra time on your parking since you paid?
No, no. And then this is what the guy said. Make sure when they come and take the boot off that your meter is paid.
Oh, man.
So that's 200 Orange Street you had to go to pay.
Yeah.
Where were you parked?
I'm parked in front on Elm Street.
How did you feel when you went out and you saw the boot in your car?
Oh, I was pissed off.
So how do you feel now, stepping back and thinking about it? Is the city right to do that or not?
I mean, you know what? I'm never going to say, you know, listen, these are tough economic times and the city has to do what it needs to do and people ought to pay their parking. And the intellectual side of me understands that I should have paid my parking
in a timely manner.
But
I just don't want to stay there.
As a cuss.
It's so interesting to me the way people get about their cars. Like if they think you touched their car.
Right. It's not the
or that if you ticketed them, they feel this personal
very
violation.
Personal. Very personal.
Yeah.
You know what it is? It's
ten.
Like if someone walk up to you and say,
and then they put that stupid sticker mess on it, which you know you have to get that off.
See, I want them to collect more from parking tickets. I actually want to see there be more and not trick you.
What?
Like I like that they make more options so that you could pay more easily, like remotely with your phone.
As long as they
make it easy to pay.
You can pay with your Park Mobile.
As they do that, I'm all for them collecting the revenue. Norma, you've been dying to say
something. First of all, I think it's very unfair to the businesses here in New Haven. I mean, I could understand before at 5 o'clock, but now they ticket you all the way till 9 o'clock. You know, that is not making the city business friendly, especially a lot of the restaurants. They have to,
make up the shortfall of the money for this stuff, I'm telling you, they need to tax bikes.
Yes. Because I was just about to say, no car, no problem.
Tax bikes
for what?
No, if you own a bike.
You walk on this part of the sidewalk.
Oh, I'll just give up my bike. The city's getting bike share. What are you saying?
So, Joe, are you going to?
You can't win this argument with bike.
I would pay 50 bucks a year to ride.
You know what? How do you justify it? And I can't for the life of me understand it. First of all, if they give you a $30 ticket and you don't pay it in 15 days, it becomes $60. And then if you don't pay it in 15 days after that, it becomes $90.
So
how about just paying your bills?
No, but sometimes you forget to pay them. And because
is that the city's fault?
No, it's not the city's fault. But it's just that it multiplied. What it does sound like, it does sound like a double jeopardy, you know. But however, I think the way to I think the way to offset that is to tax bikes. If you charge the bikes
and walkers
$50,
I don't take the parking spaces.
Marquisha, we're not going to dignify Joe's bike thing. Next thing we'll be going for pedestrians.
Tax bikes and walkers, because aren't they emitting more carbon dioxide into the air when they're walking?
I've already been taxed.
You know, I think you should have a carbon tax on you guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to start. I'm going to get a skateboard then.
Oh. A carbon tax is from the guy who's president. Just nullify the climate control treaty.
That's right. I'm playing by your rules. You see?
If you're really playing by the rules. What? Why?
No, but let me tell you. Let me just say this.
You go to Amsterdam and they text
Because
bikes,
Paul
you know
sounded
this.
Like an elitist right there when he said, well, why don't you just pay your bill?
Yeah.
Because let me tell you, because some people can't even fill their tank.
True.
Okay, and then they come downtown.
Mr. Everyman.
Wait a minute. I'm fighting for the Everyman because let me tell you.
I got to hear this.
Let me tell you this because Democrats.
He's been hanging around me.
Democrats stand on their pedestal and talk down to everybody. But they're not everybody. They don't even get
to
touch.
Because
a lot of Democrats agree with that.
So wait a second, Harry. So you're arguing that people shouldn't. So are you arguing that people therefore shouldn't have to be charged with crimes if they break other rules? If they're hungry, they steal a loaf of bread?
Well, just like you argue that immigrants should break the law every day. Let me tell you something. If I show up downtown and I can't afford to pay my parking, I should be able to just take out like a sticky and write, "Today I decide not to pay my parking tickets
because I can't afford it.
You know,
or is it technically the city saying, "Well, come on, that's fine, you can't afford it today."
We're for everybody, right? The one in the lower class. Paul just said there's no middle class. What is Paul saying? That only the rich should park downtown?
No, the rich should pay their ticket. I'm saying that if some kid goes to school, Harry,
he's like bars.
We should have enough money for a school lunch or books for kids in school. So if other people, especially often coming from the suburbs, that's who's often parking here, right? It's not just Babs. A lot of people come from the suburbs.
I paid my damn tax.
If the suburbs people are coming and they're trying to park for free in our street and break our rules, I want their money so that people can have their schools paid for.
I think we should.
Okay. And how about those who can't afford it?
So they shouldn't
come downtown, Paul? Are you saying they shouldn't come downtown?
I was going to say they do come downtown. Because they come to tax abatement committees.
I hear all the time how this is always such a melting pot. And if you stand on a certain corner of a street, you see all types of people passing through because they can't afford to be here.
Okay, that's fair. But Harry, do you think people shouldn't have to pay the meter?
Everybody should have to. But if we're going to follow, we can't just pick and choose the laws, right? So if we're going to follow this law, which harms a lot. Look, let me tell you.
I didn't have $365 to pay today, but
right,
I paid it.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say. You think it didn't harm Babs today to pay that money? It hurts.
Oh, baby.
That was the penalties that hurt.
No, it's not just the penalties. It's actually coming to work and some guy coming out of the storm drain and hitting you with a ticket before you even turn around to pay.
That's why I can't afford to drive to work, so I don't.
Well, you see, you walk to work because you choose to walk to work. There's people who actually have to walk miles. And then you have those who just have... No, and then you have those who just have enough to come downtown in their car to get to their... here we go.
Uh-oh.
And to get to their... $9 an hour, you know, 10-10, okay, job, and then you're going to hit him up for tickets.
But you know what? Let me tell you something.
I just want to thank Harry. He did not say the word Obama. It was killing him. He was trying to bring it to Obama.
And Obama. Obama. Let me tell you, we were talking about when when the middle class started disappearing. It wasn't 20 years ago. It was 8 years ago.
Cut Harry's mic off. He's not allowed to talk anymore.
You had
Norma,
but you know what? Talking about...
why do you feel sorry for the businesses?
Look at... Because I happen to eat in restaurants.
And why shouldn't people pay their parking?
No. You know what? It's amazing what happened. Have you seen the transformation? What is it when the butterfly changes?
Caterpillar.
The metamorphosis that takes place in individuals when they have gotten a ticket.
I know.
Oh, absolutely.
And they want to kill the person that gave them a ticket. Yeah. I remember one day I got a ticket.
One day?
I was so furious. I went home. I went home and I'm over there complaining to my mother. You know what my mother says? You know, they have to eat too. This is the way they make a living. And the truth be told, if I was one of those meter maids, I'd be over there competing as to who gave the most tickets.
I kind of missed
that. The city might hire you over that comment.
I just want to say one thing, a solution to this.
You guys just don't like the solution.
That New Haven is successful.
We're not going to dignify that.
Really? It's successful? That's why it has to actually, you know,
successful
regulate.
Compared to other cities, right?
But you have them giving tickets till 9 o'clock, 9 p.m.
Yeah.
You know how many times when I was putting together this office, mm-hmm. I mean, this station, mm-hmm. I had to keep running down. Every 2 hours.
So why don't y'all park in the longer term parking?
But
it's more expensive than the ticket.
When I used to drive, I parked a mile, just a bunch of blocks down State Street, where it's free, and I walked up.
Not anymore.
Oh, you want those parkers?
Yeah, I don't think there's any free parking.
Now those places, if you're not resident,
on the side of
Well, we could all agree that Babs should not have been charged. We can just agree with that exception.
Yes.
Babs, you know what, Babs? For real.
And if anybody can she do some community service instead?
Babs. If anybody can reimburse me $365, I'd
Babs,
take it.
Or GoFundMe. Really want to know what you should do, is my mic even on?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Do you really hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
See these bike people about your money. I'm telling you. I don't know why they're getting
Marquisa,
away from...
Marquisa, do we bite at this or we just leave it go?
Honestly, my bike at home, we getting a bike share. I'm good.
No, I don't know why the bikers... Why do,
shout out to bike share.
Why should drivers... bike share rigging.
What about that truck with all those bicycles that were going down the street?
Why is it that only...
We can bike and drink beer.
Car drivers... only drivers are the only one being penalized for getting to work. This is wrong. I mean, what
so you're saying people
shouldn't?
There should be no paid parking.
No,
well, I'm getting penalized. I pay state taxes for roads I don't use.
Well, so do drivers. Everybody does. Drivers do the same
thing. Exactly. So why are we having this conversation?
Because we need taxes.
I'm not saying we shouldn't. I'm just saying
you know parking should be free downtown.
No, slow down. Slow down. Given that I am single,
it should be free.
I don't have any kids. I don't own a house.
We're gonna go.
I still pay state taxes. Quit playing.
But let me ask you
a
question.
But you know who doesn't?
I don't get any
tickets.
I don't get any deductions for a home because I can't afford one.
But you know,
I don't get any deductions for a kid because I ain't got none. Okay. Stop playing.
So you don't really think that the kid who's getting an education and going on is going to help your community?
I pay taxes.
But
I gladly pay my taxes. I just shouldn't have to pay an extra tax on my bike.
But we're paying an extra
tax.
Absolutely. At the meter. Guess what car doesn't have to pay at the meter?
City.
If you have an
electric car.
Or a Prius, you don't have to put
and
money
guess
in
what
there.
Else?
Paul has a
guess
Prius.
What
are you serious?
Guess what else? And that's wrong. I'm against that
policy.
That's
totally wrong.
So I have a Prius.
Well, don't change it until I get my car.
I got a Prius, but my wife drives it. So if I'm downtown,
that's
are
you serious? Prius get away with this?
Yeah. Yes.
They should let residents of the city of New Haven pay no meter parking. Let all of the non-residents of the city of New Haven pay meter parking.
What about these businesses you love, Norma? They're going to say that's who my customers are, and now you're telling them not to come in.
No,
because we have to double it on them.
Because
the money has to come
from
somewhere,
here.
Folks. If you don't want to have property taxes go up even more.
Two-wheelers as well.
Then
you charge motorcycles.
I'm not a motorcycle.
But I'm telling you, I don't see why.
I'm not a motorcycle.
Why is it such a problem to pay? Let's even say
this. But you know what? I would be willing to give up my bike over something like that.
Marquisa, he's baiting us.
I know. I'm not stunning Joe ugly at all.
Joe's keeping a straight face, but he knows he's baiting us.
I'm not baiting him.
Listen, I've been in other countries where they do charge to ride a bike.
Amsterdam.
They have these little badges on the bikes right on the fenders.
But then they give everybody
pot. But in Amsterdam, what do you get? Because I would want all bike taxes to go into a specific bike pedestrian fund for building bike lanes. Off-road, we can get off your little bumpy roads with people trying to kill us anyway.
When you pay your regular taxes...
I'm with the governor. I want a lockbox fund on my bike taxes.
Okay, why do people... let me ask this question. Why
so y'all
do people
don't raid the
come
fund,
off with this?
Or so y'all don't raid the fund.
Why do
How
people
about that?
Always come off with, I want to know exactly where my money goes? And it's half of these people play the lottery anyway. Any money collected from the government is a tax. When you pay the lottery, you don't know where that money is going to. Then some of it goes to education.
It's earmarked, it's supposed to be, it moves around and that's
so
why you want to know, because we know that the government raids when they are in a deficit. They raid their funds to
we also know that you listen to Pundit Friday at WNHH Radio, your home for community radio at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. Hey, so what do you think about the new Hill House?
What about it? There's a new
the
Hill
new,
House?
New Hill.
You haven't heard?
No.
The new Hill House.
I'm new. I'm a few news behind. So.
Okay, Hill House is rebranding itself as?
Oh, Lord. What?
Hill House.
Oh.
Now, Hill House, if you remember back in the 60s and 50s, Hill House was known nationally as one of the top academic schools in the country. It used to be that the more academic-minded people went to Hill House, and the more trades-oriented people went to Wilbur Cross.
Hill House Academics.
And the sports teams are called Academics. Mm-hmm. there's been a, now it happens, there's a story this morning by Chris Peake at New Haven Independent, that it's sort of the last choice people go to Phil House. When you're going into high school, you get to put your first choices for schools, and the city tries to give you one or two Board of Ed, and so many people can't get in because nobody wants to go to Hill House, that Hill House ends up getting all these people who didn't want to go there. So the principal, Glenn Worthy, who I think I'm hearing is doing a very good job in the last year trying to turn this place around, he's saying we're going to make the academics describe not just our sports teams, which are doing great, but we're going to make it describe the school. And he's got some new program to get people ready to take AP tests well. They're going to start working with them in the summer. And he wants to pitch the parents who are skeptical to want to apply. And this is part of a larger Board of Ed strategy that there are so many, there's so much tension. So fraught, we have this lottery every year. You're talking about lottery, Joe, about what school you get into. And everyone wants to go to charters and magnets. And they want to make the other schools good enough that people will truly have choices rather than, because I've even talked to someone saying, like, I'm moving out of Westville because my kid can't necessarily get into Edgewood down the street because this whole lottery thing. There, because there is this panic among parents in New Haven. You kind of feel like there are a few schools that are good and the rest are really not. And I care so much about my kid. I can't just have him going anywhere. Do you think that, that Hill House can pull it off? Do you think it's even needed? Do you think maybe things are better there than people think?
No, I think that, like you said, Glenn Worthy is doing a good job over there at actually bringing the school forward. Didn't Hill House have a couple kids went to Ivy League this year?
Yeah.
So that's part of their testimony, and that needs to be highlighted to the parents who are concerned about where your kids are going. Guess what? We put two kids in Ivy League. What? So that, if that don't look like a path to advance, I mean, nothing. You see, people get in their minds too that, you know, Ivy League is the crap, but it tells it is based on the ratings of schools. It shows that you put kids on a path to go somewhere, and that's what Glenn Worthy and Board of Ed should be pushing, and that will sell Hill House. Because I'll tell you right now, people in the suburbs hear that, you'll be surprised. They'll be dropping their kids off at Hill House.
It's interesting. Suburb people want to go to Wilberforce. Course, now let me ask you this.
Oh, you think they won't? Trust me. Yeah. I know for
I'm not disagreeing with you.
They will.
It is interesting to me that maybe
we'll not in Waterbury,
Cross and Hill House flip about which is the more academic school. Maybe that's not bad.
Excuse me?
You know, just the rep, what Hill House and Cross, their reps flipped.
Right.
Over 50 years. Now, right. Cross is seen as the one, even though this isn't the whole majority of the school, it's the one, if you have kids who are academically oriented, right, you want them to go on there. Unless you have specialized, like Babs kids go to Common Ground, which is supposed to be a great school, you know, where you have sort of the right fit for the place at a smaller school. What were you about to say, Markeisha?
I was thinking one thing on Joe Ugly's point, and this is not in any way a knock to Hill House, but like, I am curious, the kids that went to the Ivy League schools, and we know one of them is Cora Ortiz, who's an amazing student. Mm-hmm. But also, are you just an amazing student? Were you already on that trajectory regardless of where you were at school?
But the bottom
she
line
came
is,
from foot school. She obviously has something going on at
but
home.
But however...
And I don't knock that, will, but I'm just...
I understand the transition over. That's a good student as such. But if you can have a good student to come out of there, then there can be more. It's my point.
Well, look, I also think that there are ways in high school that you protect your top students, right? Like, I got that in my own high school. So I was shunted into AP classes. So I'm not in the general population. It sounds like prison.
I'm not in the general population. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
But at the same time, in my high school, you had kids like me who were in AP. Mm-hmm. You had kids who were in quote unquote college prep. But I think the more that you can show that all of these kids have a trajectory, that they're going to college, that they're going to trade schools, that they have, that they're ready, because the forum that Babs moderated, there was a lot of talk in about New Haven schools in general about there being either a perception or a real problem of the ability of kids to come out of New Haven public schools and feel like I'm ready for the next step.
Right. But that's not just here in New Haven.
And that's not just Hill House. That's the entire
system. There's an elephant in the room here. And it's not very far from Hill House. You can walk there and not get taxed by Joe's bicycle tax. And that's Amistad High School in Dixwell.
Yeah.
That's a charter school, hedge fund money, right? So that's where you get a lot of those motivated kids who do all, they tell you you're going to go to college, and they kick out the ones who can't. But then, allegedly. But they, you know, they get a lot more kids to college, a lot of working class African-American families trying to get their kids into that school. That's where they want them to go.
They
don't want them to go to
Hill House. Branded this school as being such a safe haven for your kids.
And that's
just
what Hill House
brand
is doing by rebranding itself, which I think is great. Like, you have to change
that
perception.
But what about branding versus reality?
No, but exactly, because over there, I look at that school as a pathway to penitentiary. I don't care how you look at it. It's like, I'm the first to tell. You got Mr.
But they're creaming. They're getting the kids who really
exactly.
you wish were at Hill House.
Of course. You should know it's nonsense in that school. They got B.S. Carson on the picture up there. I mean,
no,
Benjamin
but I don't
Solomon
think I don't
Carson.
Think parents are stupid. You know, I think they know what they're doing.
It's not about
they want
stupid,
their kids
Paul.
To go there because they feel the kids are going to do better.
And why do they feel that way? School, because right? it's a brand. Because at the end of the day, what's going through those kids? I had a couple of kids over there who would tell you they really hated their parents forced them to go there because they believe that it's going to be a better place. But as far as the social being with these kids, I watch how withdrawn some of these kids get. Okay? They don't communicating with others. It's either over aggressive or it's very pullback. I've watched it over the last 2 to 3 years. Kids who have been around me that go to that school. I've heard nightmare stories of kids who want going back to wet in the bed at teenagers. Oh, because they're concerned about if they're going to get demerits because their pen, they drop a pen. Or if they cough in class. One person got in trouble because they were smiling. It's like, for what? You can't smile? What kind of nonsense is that?
Can I tell you about an email I got?
So parents will hear this, you know, it's being disciplined in school. It's like if you hear a football team telling you that, we make sure that our kids play real hard and they're very focused. But you're not paying attention. They're like, well, yeah, that sounds like a real good football team for my kid to go play. But however, you ignore the fact that they don't let the kid go over and drink water when they're thirsty. They could be dehydrated and die.
Can I tell you my
favorite? Don't be so dramatic, okay?
I'm not so dramatic. That's the reality.
Can I tell you quickly before we're going to wrap up?
That's what has happened.
Can I tell you my favorite news I heard this week?
What's your favorite news?
Couple of years, a year ago, I went to California to see my best friend from growing up, and he was going into hospice. He had a brain tumor in the back of his head they couldn't operate on. And sweet guy, I love the guy, he's brilliant, a big heart. And this was actually a year before last. And he said goodbye to everybody, and he was in hospice. And then at the end of the year, they said, for some reason, we can't figure out why, it's not growing anymore. You're kicked out of hospice. So he was like, and
he's the only person to ever graduate from hospice.
He graduated from hospice. So then he was around and he was like working half. He actually started a new company. He's doing stuff in Silicon Valley. And he, but he was still kind of sick. And now they just told him,
you're not sick.
You're not going to be on medicine anymore.
Whoa.
Tell him he needs
a
startup
in New Haven.
For some
reason, got smaller. And he told me that the year he was in hospice, California had passed a law for assisted suicide, but it hadn't gone into effect yet. And he said if it had been the law, he would have done it.
Oh.
He'd be dead right now. But because the law hadn't taken effect yet, he was waiting. And then he found out he had a second chance at life.
Wow.
Now, we could talk about that for an hour, but I thought I might just leave it hanging there.
Oh, you really left a real cliffhanger on that one. Right? Please, let's talk about that next week.
Okay, then that means people are going to have to rejoin us next week.
Absolutely.
Here on
to hear
Friday
the follow-up.
On WNHH Radio.
Amazing.
I just wanted to share that with you guys. That's my favorite news story of the week. And
great,
I love my friend
news.
Jeffrey. He was a great friend.
I'm glad you met Jeff.
And that means you get to go see him again.
That's right.
That's awesome.
Congratulations.
Thank you for joining us today in Dateline New Haven. Thanks to pundits Babs Earls Ivy, back from the boot. And I do think it's a huge injustice that she should have to pay those tickets.
We're going
to
put that on the GoFundMe. her favorite liquor.
Markeisha Ricks.
That too.
Norma Rodriguez Reyes. Bravest man in New Haven, Harry Dros. Mm-hmm. And the man of so many titles
today.
That we can't do it twice in 1 hour,
thank
Joe.
God. Yeah, thank goodness.
We're going to take it out with
hate
the Afro.
Is gonna hate.
We're going to take it out the Afro-Semitic experience performing I Wish I Knew How It'd Feel to Be Free from the group CD A Plea for Peace. Now, we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book it and fly free with us all weekend long at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.